Call to order this meeting of the Tax Reform Division of the Senate Tax Committee. As I mentioned, I think in the first meeting, we're going to take a look at the minutes of the previous hearings and approve them as we go along so that we're not having to take a look at them after the session is over and make any corrections then. So we have the minutes from Wednesday, January 16th. That's the only one I have. And if you would look that over for a minute, any corrections that need to be made? Not Senator Coonan moves that the minutes be approved. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails and the minutes stand approved. And then we have Thursday's minutes. Well, anything need to be corrected there? Senator Coonan moves adoption of the approval of the minutes from Thursday, January 17th. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Today, we're going to be taking up two bills dealing with the estate tax. I would direct members' attention, because we are going to be referring as bills come forward to how they are discussed in the tax expenditure book. We'll be doing the same for the various proposals that are coming that are affects the tax system from the governor's budget. And so I would direct your attention to page 99. And I wonder, Ms. Pollack, if you could just give us a brief overview. This is Chapter 3, and it's not a very long chapter, but just how does the estate tax work now? And then following that, I'll just ask Senators Coonan and Gazelka to go to the witness table just to start talking about their bill and the occasion of it, and also pointing out that I did send around a link to an article that was in the Star Tribune, taken from the New York Times, that examined the changes that were made in the federal fiscal cliff bill that are now permanent, and the discussion of how that affects state taxes in the states. And it specifically mentions what the exemption amount is in Minnesota, and the two bills we'll have before us will be proposing changes in that. Ms. Pollack, would you just kind of go over what's in Chapter 3 here of the tax expenditure budget and how the estate tax works in Minnesota? Unless the two authors were planning on doing that. Senator Gazelka, is it okay if Ms. Pollack does it? Okay.
Madam Chair and members, the estate tax is a state tax as well as a federal tax. Some changes were made in the early 2000s where Minnesota came to be known as a pickup estate tax, where the feds no longer allowed credit for estate taxes paid. Some states picked up that credit amount and made that part of our estate tax base payable amount. In terms of the expenditures, what I don't see here is there was one provision enacted 2 years ago that allows for exclusions from the federal or the Minnesota taxable estate, certain qualified property for small farms, small businesses, and farms, and that is an exclusion of up to $4 million. There is in Minnesota right now a general estate tax exclusion of $1 million, and the federal exclusion right now is $5 million, and that was just adopted as part of the fiscal cliff deal going forward.
Anything else you want to tell us about the other provisions in here and the exclusions, et cetera? What's not included?
Oh, Madam Chair, Ms. McQuay corrected me. I said that the small business and farm property exclusion was not included, but it is on page 102.
And it looks like charitable gifts are excluded from the valuation, too? Is that
yes.
right? I'm just looking at everything they talk about here.
Madam Chair, yes, that's
and
correct.
There's a marital deduction. And that still is in place? Is that the same for the federal?
Madam Chair, yes, it's still in place in Minnesota, and I'm not sure about the federal taxable estate.
We're going to ask the department to come up, too, to comment on these. What is meant by the special use valuation? Is that real property that they're talking about there?
Yes, Madam Chair, real property.
It looks like that brings in dollars too. Or, no, I'm sorry. It's has a minor impact. And then life insurance is not included or is included?
Madam Chair and members, the value of life insurance proceeds are included in the amount of the gross estate, but they can be included in excluded from the valuation of the gross estate if the decedent had forfeited any right to that proceed.
Okay, any...
Madam Chair.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Pollack, on the farm and small business property, if a couple has a business, do they both get the $4
million? Madam Chair and Senator Scoy, I'm not sure if I understand the question.
So it's a family-run business owned between a husband and a wife. They both die in a car accident. Do they both get the $4 million?
Madam Chair and Senator Scoy, it's the maximum amount is up to $4 million per...
For the business or per individual?
For the property, yes.
For the property, okay.
Maybe I'll call him Ms. Von Mosch.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Susan Von Mosch with the Minnesota Department of Revenue, and I have with me Jenny Ryan, who is our expert on estate tax.
You want to also respond to Senator Scoy's question again? I'm sorry, I didn't hear your name.
My name is Jenny Ryan. And
Ryan,
I'm,
Ms. Yes. Ryan. Thank you, Ms. Ryan.
Madam Chair, Senator Scoy, your question was if married spouses died in a car accident and they jointly owned a small business, what would be the result? Mm-hmm. It's a more complicated question than just a question about the deduction. There are rules that decide in a simultaneous death situation what parts of the property are included in each spouse's gross estate. Basically, there are rules that decide which spouse died first. So once we figure out what's in the gross estate, to the extent there's any qualified property that meets the requirements for the deduction for the first decedent spouse, they would have a deduction of up to $4 million. And then if that same property that met the qualifications also was included in the second spouse to die, you know, then we would relook at the qualified amount, and it would again be up to $4 million. Does that answer your question?
So, Madam Chair and Ms.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Ms. Ryan. So they both would get the $4 million.
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy, yes, although it's doubtful that the full $4 million would actually be in both, it might not be in both spouses' gross estate. Does that make sense?
Madam Chair, Ms. Senator Ryan, let's take the car accident and just not have simultaneous death then. So one spouse dies, their estate goes to the other one, mm-hmm. and a year later that person passes. Does both estates get the $4 million?
Ms. Ryan.
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy, if the qualified property transferred to the surviving spouse, yes, the deduction is available at both spouses' death.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gazelka and then Senator Thompson.
Thank you. Ms. Ryan, I know the Minnesota estate tax over $1 million right now, I believe, is 40%. What is it over $5 million?
Madam Chair, Senator Gazelka, so that's also a very complicated question. Okay, because of the way Minnesota's estate tax is currently calculated, estates pay the lesser of two amounts, okay? One amount is calculated with regard to old federal law that we call the pickup tax. It was the maximum amount that estates could deduct from their federal tax for state death taxes, Minnesota's estate tax. The other amount is calculated with regard to what we call the federal unified credit. So you calculate two amounts, you pay the lesser of the two. This results in a strange rate system where for all estates, the first about $90,000 over $1 million, there's a marginal rate of around 41%. But then the marginal rates drop off, and they range from, I believe it's about 5 or 6% up to 16% for the amounts over $10 million. If you were to move the exclusion amount from Minnesota's current $1 million exclusion to the federal $5 million exclusion, just for an example, but you maintained the current calculation system where we looked at two different amounts and you pay the lesser of the two, I believe our research department has looked at that and has concluded that that rate bubble that people are concerned about, that 41%, it doesn't go away, it just moves. Does that make sense? It's a problem with relying on this concept of calculating two different amounts under an old code and paying the lesser of the two that generates that strange rate structure.
Madam
Senator
Chair, could you just so if it's above $5 million, is it roughly 5 to 16%, or and that's what I'm.
Ms.
Well,
Ryan,
Senator, or Madam Chair, Senator Gazelka, the rate for the values above $5 million are around 11%.
Okay.
But that's just the rate being applied to the dollars above $5 million. Does that?
Yes.
Okay.
Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to try to address Senator Skoy. I think if I understood your question, it was can the amount to be passed on estate tax-free be preserved for both spouses? Was that kind of what you were asking? So that if the exclusion is $5 million, could they pass $10 million? I don't know. I have not looked at the specifics of the legislation pertaining to the estate tax that was passed in the as a part of the fiscal cliff bill, but historically what you try to do with estate planning is if you have that kind of estate that's large enough to be subject to estate tax, a good estate planning attorney will try to create a trust so that on the first passing, let's for purpose of argument assume the husband passes first, that husband's enough assets go into a trust that is then not controlled by the surviving spouse, that both of those unified credits, both of the $5 million or whatever it may be. The feds have been playing with it. So if you estate plan properly, and if you're willing to put your assets in different names so that maybe, you know, one retirement account is in spouse A's name and the other retirement account is in spouse B's name, you can do that, but it requires estate planning. If you don't do that, you can lose one spouse's exclusion. And so it's a matter of estate planning.
Madam Chair, to that point, and it has to be done before the death. Both spouses have to be living when that decision was made.
That is correct, Madam Chair and Senator Gazalka. So, that's right.
Is there a time period? You know, other things have to be done that are, quote, not in anticipation of dying, sometimes 3 years, 5 years, whatever?
Not on that.
Does it matter?
Madam Chair, there is no look back on that.
No look back.
As long as you do it before the first spouse passes, it is legally enforceable.
Well,
I think we can see, and I'll go right back to you, Senator Skoy, that having a bill that just changes a single number in this area is not easy. It is not an easy area of the tax law, and it's very, very complicated. So I really appreciate the discussion if we eventually move forward on either one of these proposals. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Ryan, is what Senator Thompson and Senator Gazalka are saying correct, that in order to accomplish the use of the exclusion for the husband and the wife, they have to do some estate planning with wills and trusts, or say they don't have a will? They own a business together. Husband dies. His estate gets the exclusion. The value, 50% of it goes to the spouse, 25% or whatever to their kids, however that distributes. Then the spouse dies. Doesn't that estate also get the exclusion and they didn't have a will or any estate planning?
Ms. Ryan.
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy, I think what Senator Thompson is getting at is the use of marital deduction planning and the relationship between the marital deduction and the exclusion amount. And it is true that to make the best use of the $1 million exclusion amount and the marital deduction, that often married spouses who have accumulated significant wealth do need to use pour-over trusts or Type A and Type B trust planning to plan to reduce their gross estate as much as possible. My answer, I guess, to your earlier question was that there's nothing that keeps both estates have access to the qualified farm property deduction to the extent that qualified property is included in their taxable estate. If some of that qualified property transferred to a spouse, they might be using the marital deduction instead of the qualified farm property deduction in order to reduce their taxable estate. But yes, the exclusion amount and the marital deduction and the relationships between those two often requires significant planning to reduce taxes as much as possible.
Thank you.
But the marital deduction is unlimited, is that correct?
Madam Chair, yes, the marital deduction is unlimited.
Yep. And that's true both at the feds and in the state. We conform on that. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, yes, that's correct.
Is it the case that, as complicated as all this is, that the real difference between the federal law and Minnesota's law is the amount of the exclusion? Is that right? Or do we have a peculiar set of laws with regard to approaching a state?
Madam Chair, one of the big differences is the difference in the exclusion amount. Mm-hmm. Okay. The other big difference now with the most currently enacted federal law is that the exclusion amount, the $5 million exclusion amount federally, is portable between married spouses. So that reduces, I believe, the need for trust planning, or it changes the need for trust planning to the extent that If my spouse and I have $10 million worth of accumulated wealth, and we don't do any trust planning, and it all comes to me, and I use we use the marital deduction on the first decedent spouse's death, and none of the $5 million exclusion amount, that $5 million that could have been used against the first decedent spouse's estate will port to me, and when I die, I will have $10 million available on my estate. So that has now become a big difference between federal law and Minnesota law. And, of course, on the sidelines, the other difference is that federal law has a gift tax, and they calculate their taxes in a unified way. So, and we do not have a gift tax, so that changes. It's just a difference in how our tax works vis-a-vis the federal unified system between their estate tax and their gift tax.
Is there a look back period in the gift tax, the federal gift tax?
Madam Chair, now you're getting, since I'm not a federal estate tax attorney, you're getting a little outside of my realm of knowledge. But there are planning opportunities that are created currently with the differences in the exclusion amount and the lack of a state gift tax. It does create some planning conundrums for people.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Just one second. Ms. Von Mosch, does the how many estates on an annual basis end up paying estate tax in Minnesota? Just the number under the current law.
Madam Chair, there are about 1,000 that pay the estate tax. There are
each year?
Madam Chair, yes, that would be the figure for 2010.
For 2010.
Okay.
I just want members to get an idea of the magnitude of this when they look at these revenue estimates. You know, where if all these exclusions are out there, how come there it will, in the one case, be almost $34 million in foregone revenue, and the other one, 60, as we get into the discussion.
Yes, Madam Chair, and the revenue estimates at the bottom do give an estimate of the number of taxpayers that might be affected by those estimates.
Okay, Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Another question or comment, and then we'll go to the bills.
Ms. Ryan, I just want a clarification of something you said. Maybe this is because of the recent federal law. If somebody had a couple of $10 million of assets, did not do a trust, the first spouse dies, you know, the way it always was, all of it would go to the second spouse. The second spouse dies, only $5 million is protected. But I thought I heard you say $10 million is now protected. Is that as a result of the most recent change?
Madam Chair, Senator Gazelka, correct. Under the new federal law, if an election is made when the first decedent spouse dies to preserve the unused exclusion amount, then when the second spouse dies, that unused portion is available to the second spouse in addition to the $5 million exclusion amount they would normally be allowed. Now, when I say that simply, I just want to point out it's very complicated. People have to stay married. There are rules for remarriage. It's not that straightforward. But that's the general idea.
Thank you.
I think we'll maybe ask about that with Senator Kuna and Senator Gazelka. Does your bills, as proposed to be amended, take into account that particular aspect of the federal bill? That's I think an interesting change that, even if it's very complicated, it is on the surface an inch deep. It's actually easy to understand. That portability is in there, and whether that would be a good that that might be a good policy change in Minnesota, even if we didn't change the exclusion amount. I mean, that's something to think about, that there are other things that have implications for Minnesota's estate tax. So I hope you'll keep yourselves available there, but I'm going to ask Senator Gazelka and Senator Coonan to go to the witness table and tell us about your bills and what you hope to accomplish and how they're different. And we'll just ask both to go at the same time, and we'll take in their order Senator Coonan's bill first, Senate File 12. Senator Coonan.
Madam Chair and committee, I do have an amendment for Senate File 12. It's the A5 amendment.
Okay. Senator Coonan moves the A5 amendment, and we will proceed like we have before, which is put authors' amendments on the bills as they see fit. And when we come to the end of the hearing, we will lay both bills on the table without a vote as amended. So Senator Coonan moves the A5 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Okay. Opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. And we note that it is a delete everything amendment. So Senator Coonan, you want to now take us through your bill amended that reflects the delete all amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What the bill does.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's not a delete all. I read it wrong. It is a true amendment to the bill. But so just explain it anyway, if you would.
Sure, Madam Chair. And the revenue estimate and the all the other printed material addresses the bill as amended.
As with this amendment.
Right.
Yes, I understand that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. What the bill as amended does is increase the Minnesota tax exclusion from $1 million to $2 million, so there's that change. It decreases the qualified small business property and farm property exclusion from $4 million to $3 million, and the reason I did that is with the increase of the exclusion from $1 to $2 million when you add the numbers together, you end up at $5 million, as same as it was before with the $1 million exclusion. And so that's the reason for
so,
that.
So, Senator Coonan, so that means that otherwise there would have been an exclusion of $6 million, which was more than what the feds have. Is that
Madam Chair, idea? That's right, yes.
Okay.
And so that is the reason for that, that change. It also addresses the filing requirement and changes that to account for the $2 million exclusion amount. And then the bill is effective for decedents dying after December 31st of 12. And I always like to think Minnesota is a conforming state, but, of course, it gets to be a budget issue. If you look at the revenue estimate, you can see there is some cost to this. Otherwise, you know, I like the idea of just simplifying everything and moving to a $5 million exclusion for everyone, but it's cost reasons is why I had this bill drafted the way it is. Madam Chair talked about a link she sent out for an article about the federal estate tax, and if you had a chance to read it, you saw it was kind of interesting. If you hadn't read it yet, it is a good read, but it gives a quick overview of the federal estate tax, and the estate tax 10 years ago had an exemption. This is federal tax. Now, it had exemption of $675,000 and anything above that at a 55% rate. Well, there were some changes throughout the years. In 2009, it was at $3.5 million. with a 45% tax rate after that. In 2010, it actually disappeared. And then for 11 and 12, there was a $5 million exemption with a 35% rate. And now, with the negotiations with the fiscal cliff bill, the exemption is still at $5 million federally, and the rate is at 40%, and that exemption amount is indexed for inflation. And my bill also does not include indexing for inflation. It's just a locked-in amount. So that's kind of, you know, just trying to lay out a little bit of the interaction between what happens here in Minnesota and federally.
Any questions of Senator Kunin's approach here? There was some question about, or in my mind, about the impact of the November forecast on estate taxes. There were either technical or technical policy provisions in the vetoed bill last year. Is any of that adopted in here or in the estimate? And I guess actually my question is, if the governor had signed the bill that had the estate tax provisions in them, how would that affect your bill? And Senator Gazelka, be the same question for your bill here. And Ms. Pollack, do you know the answer to that too?
Not exactly the answer, but I can explain the concept.
Does Ms. Ryan know the answer, or Ms. Von Mosch? Just what it, I mean, I see the November forecast referenced here with regard to the small business and farm deduction. I wonder what other changes were in there that would have that effect. And I know in the technical bill, I believe it is, that the department is considering that there's language that deals with the estate tax. Could you bring us up to date on that? And
yeah.
Why that's referenced here and what difference it makes to their revenue estimate and to the language in the bill currently.
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. In 2011, in the special session, the qualified small business and farm provisions were passed. That was during a time when I think things were happening kind of fast, and what happened during that in that language is that there were some elements of the language that in the course of analyzing them after the legislation was enacted, it was determined that there were some unintended consequences of some of the language that relates to how it tied in with federal language.
In the 2011 bill.
In the 2011 bill. That staff worked with members who authored the bills and worked with legislative staff and drafted a correction for the bills in 2012 that were in the department technical bill. The intent of the technical bill at that time was to only represent or only to make the corrections that represented the intent of the bill as it passed, and the revenue notice at that time represented what people thought was the intent of the bill at the time, because everyone was unaware of some of the nuances of the language. That bill was not enacted, and at that time it was carried at no cost because it was assumed that there would be a correction in the language, and then the language was not corrected. So during the process of getting ready for the November forecast, then corrections were made in the revenue estimate for the November forecast that took into account that the corrections were not made.
And so the revenue impact of that.
Impact of that, the difference between the there's a reduction in the November forecast for revenue, the revenues coming from the estate tax of about $34 million. And that would have been recognizing the fact that the language was not corrected.
These two bills, it's my understanding, do change the exemption amounts or the exclusion amounts and do not go in and make other changes, I believe. I just have seen the A5 amendment today, but is that correct? Yes, that is correct. So the bills we're looking at today in their current form don't deal with any of those issues yet. The current draft department technical bill that will be introduced soon does contain some corrections for the estate tax that were a little more minor, and again, it's taking the corrections that are have no fiscal impact, because now the fiscal impact has been transferred into the forecast numbers.
So if the provisions in the vetoed bill were added to either of these two bills, then the in Senator Coonan's bill, it would be almost a wash. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, I am not sure about that.
You said $34 million, and his bill is $33.9 million in relief.
Madam Chair, I would feel more confident responding to that question if I actually had the tax revenue people look at the numbers, because this is such a complex area. So I think there are elements in the corrections that would raise revenue and elements that would cost revenue. It just depends on which elements you're looking at.
And the reason I bring that up is if we move forward on either one of these bills, there is some, you know, offsetting revenue lost and gained, and it enables us, in my mind, then, particularly with Senator Coonan's bill, because Senator Gazelka's bill goes a lot farther, in a sense, to concentrate on the policy of increasing the exemption or the exclusion rather than the revenue itself, and because it may well be negligible, the difference, at least in Senator Coonan's bill. We'd be interested in that down the line, and I know it's very confusing to me. Maybe other members understand it perfectly well, but it indeed may be an area that we want to move forward in, but we don't want any more unintended consequences or lack of nuance in dealing with this area. So we hope that you will pay particular attention to it if we decide to move on it.
Madam Chair, yes, we're more than happy to work with you as you move forward on this.
Senator Gazelka, you want to, or Senator Coonan, you had any more discussion about your approach? Who is it, by the way, for both of you gentlemen, what sector is the estate tax fall most heavily on? I mean, we all might think of investors and so on, but how much of it falls on people who are farmers, for example? Senator Coonan, do you have any idea? Or Senator Gazelka?
Madam Chair, I don't know the answer to that.
Madam Chair, mine would only be anecdotal. I mean, that's one of the reasons I'm doing this, but I know I will have Gino Frignito. I think he represents the CPAs. He might be able to give us that maybe after I present, and we can do that. And that's how I came about to do this. I have a client up in my insurance practice, and he said, I don't mind paying the income taxes, he said, but Minnesota's estate tax issues are terrible. Now, that was before all the income taxes were going up, so I don't know. But that was part of it. You know, as he just said, you know, I live in Minnesota 6.5 months. There's no reason I couldn't be here a little less than 6 months. You know, so, and I hear that on a regular basis. And then, you know, certainly a lot of the farmers in my area, you know, I think it's better than it used to be, but I want to do everything I can to make sure that they keep families in the farm or farms in the family. So this bill, the way I've got it proposed, in fact, I do have an A3 amendment Madam Chair, that I need to offer, and then there's a...
Let us take an action on Senator Coonan's bill first.
Thanks.
So Senator Coonan moves that the... well, we don't have to do that. I'll just say it.
Say it, Madam.
We will lay over Senate File 5 as, or whatever the number is.
Madam Chair.
Senate File 12 as amended. Senator Coonan, you have a further comment, though?
I do have an A7 amendment, which is a technical amendment, but, you know, the department may have to come up and let us know if it addresses the issues that it would like to.
Okay. Before we move to Senator Gazelka's bill, Senator Coonan offers the A, whatever it is, 7? This is also an author's amendment. And I understand that Ms. Pollack can explain what the impact of it is, but what was your intent in offering this? And before we do that, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. The intent of the A7 amendment, and then Ms. Pollack can go through the technical part of it. What's the intent?
Well, I was hoping to address some of those issues in the vetoed bill, but I don't know if it covers all of them yet, and maybe Ms. Pollack.
Okay. Ms. Pollack, we've heard the discussion from Ms. Von Mosch about the provisions in the vetoed bill. You want to go through what this does, then?
Madam Chair and members, the A7 amendment contains the strictly administrative filing return due date and payment due date for the estate tax returns for the Minnesota estate tax. And these were in the vetoed bill last year, and they are also contained in the department's technical bill this year. These are strictly technical issues that have no revenue impact.
Any questions for Senator Coonan about that? Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Coonan, these are non-revenue changes. Have you looked at the changes that were in the bill that impacted the revenue? And has Senator Gazelka or Senator Coonan, have either one of you looked at that? It seems to me that if there were changes that were made in the bill of last year that the legislature thought should happen, even if they did have revenue impact, we probably should be including that in our discussion.
Senator Coonan.
Madam Chair and Senator Skoy, and I agree with you. We need to have that discussion. The truth of the matter is we kind of ran out of time for this meeting, but I think all of those things need to be looked at. And this one is purely technical. There's no money impact on this one. But there are some issues that need to be dealt with, and one of them is also, as I understand, that there's the language needs to be cleared up on if for the exemption for small businesses and farm property, if trusts are included in the exemption or not. So there's some more work to do on this, Madam Chair and Senator Skoy.
My question is, if those provisions had passed into law last year, would they have a revenue impact with the bill that you're presenting now? Or is it only because they got caught up in the forecast because they weren't enacted? Ms. Pollack, do you know the answer to that? Or Senator Coonan, do you know the answer to that?
Madam Chair, I think Ms. Pollack can probably answer.
Madam Chair and members, yes, there would be some interaction because while Senator Coonan's bill does have a cost, because of the November forecast, those costs would be offset slightly by the gains caused by the interpretation of the language that was not enacted.
See what happens when bills get vetoed, Senator Ortman?
I would say. Big impact.
Even the technical things. You wonder if we couldn't have gotten a different result. Anyway, any other questions for Senator Coonan? If none, we will lay over Senate File 12 as amended. And if we pursue either one of these bills or approaches, we will take into consideration those other provisions that were not simply technical. And actually hope that both of you will pursue that together if you don't mind. Senator Gazelka brings a Senate file.
40.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have the A3 author's amendment and one technical oral amendment that I would like to offer.
Okay, let us get it in front of us first, and then I will call on you to offer we're not going to make it an amendment to the amendment. You just tell me where the change is. We'll incorporate the change that you ask for as part of your amendment.
It's on line 2.2 after tax amount, quotation A, end quotation, that needs to remain, not be stricken. So reinstate the stricken quotations.
Okay, say that again.
On line 2.2, right after the words tax amount, we want to reinstate the stricken quotation A. Quotation.
Oh, it's 2.20.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, 2.20.
Yep, thank you.
Section 3 of the bill in subdivision 1. And now will you say again, because now I'm actually looking at it. What is the change?
It needs to be reinstated instead of stricken.
Reinstate.
The A.
Yes.
Okay, we will incorporate that change in the amendment as offered. Any questions about that? So, Senator Gazelka moves the A3 amendment with the change incorporated. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Now, Senator Gazelka, if you explain how your approach in what ways it differs at this point from Senator Unas?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this is a simpler approach, but also a little more expensive. But basically, as proposed and amended, the exclusion amount would increase to $5 million from the $1 million to conform with federal legislation. The exclusion also includes the portability between spouses, mm-hmm. So that is in there.
That Ms. Ryan spoke of?
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, and I mentioned what prompted me to take a look at this, was people in my community and the fact that they can go wherever they want to go. I know that Wisconsin law, at least it's my understanding, now conforms federally. Which means there's only one little border that would allow people to move over and take advantage of that, depending on what their business or farm is. But so that was the reason that I wanted to do it. One of the arguments in the past was, well, we don't know where the federal government is going. Well, now they've made their changes permanent. Compliance is a lot easier. It's easy to follow. It's easy to interpret. You know, so that's where I'm at. The things I like to do is try as much as possible conform with the federal, whether it's the marriage deduction or what. I mean, all the different things that we take a look at, this is one of those. But I also visited with Gino Fragnito, and he came in, and I would like to have his testimony as well.
Sure. And Mr. Fragnito, please come forward. And Senator Gazelka, your proposal does not – you don't have amendments that make those technical changes or that deal with the provisions in the vetoed bill. Is that correct?
Correct, Madam Chair. And Ms. Pollack, I think we had the discussion that we don't need it based on the changes that I make and would already include it, basically.
That's included in the estimate of what the foregone revenue would be is the because it's a full conformity kind of thing, that it is you would not need that technical change amendment. Is that correct,
Madam
Ms. Pollack?
Chair, I'd like Ms. Pollack to answer that.
Madam Chair, yes. Partially because of the full conformity issue and also because in Senator Gazelka's bill, we move only to the $5 million general exclusion amount and get rid of the farm and small business property exclusion. Clarifying language on those provisions is no longer needed.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, before I have the testifier speak, right now, if you get above $5 million, 40, I believe it's 40% is taxed at the federal levels. In Minnesota, and then you've got the amount that comes from Minnesota. So I'm sure over 50,000 or 50% when you combine them both. Right now in Minnesota, once you get above a million, as I understand it, Minnesota's taking 40%. And so, you know, I just, that's another part of my concern on this. I wanted to bring that up.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Skoy, and then Mr. Brickinger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Gazelka, but did I hear Ms. Ryan say that neither one of these proposals are affecting that bubble in the rate because of the nature of the Minnesota, I don't remember the, what they called it, but they had this other provision in there?
Senator Gazelka, comment?
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy, if on my proposal, if we move it to $5 million, the first $5 million, there is going to be no Minnesota estate tax. And then once we get over $5 million, the formula would be a much lower amount than that initial 40% that Minnesota now begins at above a million.
Yeah, well,
which is why it costs so much.
And, Madam Chair, maybe I'll get clarification from the department on that, because I thought I heard Ms. Ryan say that rate bubble was going to occur. It just was going to move up.
Let's have her come back to the table, and she can either support your interpretation or give us an alternative one. Ms. Ryan, welcome back.
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy. So this, the problem here is the discussions between marginal rates and effective rates. Okay, so the rate bubble that people are concerned about, I believe we refer to that as the marginal rate. It's the rate on the change in the rate between the last dollar, right? Okay, so currently under our law, when we look at those rates, for the first $93,000, $94,000 above a million, that's where that 41% rate comes into play. The rate on the last dollar, it's at this 41% rate. And then as you go on, the rate drops off, and it ranges from, I believe, 6% to 16%. If you adopt a $5 million exclusion amount, but you continue to have a tax that is calculated as these two amounts and you pay the lesser of the two, and you're referring to what is obsolete federal law, the old pickup tax, that continues in that bill. I believe what our revenue estimators have told me, our research people have told me, is that you don't rid yourself of that rate problem. That continues. The overall tax rate, right, that runs from 0 to, I think, 10%, or right, that functions properly. But that rate bubble doesn't go away. To get that to go away, we'd really need to remove this reference to old federal law and create a rate structure of our own.
And Madam Chair?
Senator Skoy.
And Ms. Ryan, has the department ever looked at the cost to removing that language?
Ms. Ryan?
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy, I don't know if we have actual numbers for removing that problem, but my recollection is that in past sessions, there have been senators and representatives that have introduced bills or have at least talked about bills that would impose our own rate structure. But I don't know what those costs or what the final drafts really looked like, but they certainly have been around.
Well, Madam Chair, maybe Ms. Ryan could provide the committee some information that the department has on this, give us something to think about as we're...
Ms. Von Mosch has a comment. We'll ask her to come up, too.
Mr. Chair, Senator Skoy,
The 2011 special session language actually required the department to do a study of the estate tax. It was a very broad-based language that included looking at all of the different options and what Minnesota should do, whether we should not have one, whether we should have one that's freestanding, whether we should conform with the federal, which at the time the federal was the $3 million exclusion, and now it's the $5 million. That study is underway, and we expect it to be coming out in a number of weeks to a month. And so I think within that study, some of these issues about what are the options will be explored, and we'll be able to share more information with you at that time.
Ms. Von Mascha, I hope that you will alert in particular Senators Gazelka and Kunin, who are taking up this area, and share with them any information even prior to the release of the report so that they can refine their proposals coming before us. I think it is a complicated part of the law, and some of us understand it obviously better than others, but it's probably time to do something. And we look forward to that study, but I particularly hope you'll involve Senator Kunin and Senator Gazelka.
Thank you,
Thank
ma'am.
Thank you. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And about that, it's become perilously close to Green Acres in terms of its complexity, mm-hmm. our estate tax. And if we continue on the course that we're on, we're going to have a problem because Minnesotans won't have any idea how they are being taxed. And so it seems to me that study really is very important. That's why we asked for the study. And to simplify is going to be a very important part of what we do if we do anything. I hope that we don't do anything unless we include the simplifications, and that Senators Gazelka and Kunin will include that and work together to propose something that really fixes the problem and creates transparency and simplicity in the structure so people really understand how the tax system works. Otherwise, I think we're really we're in trouble if we try and do a whole bunch of technical right. changes, change levels. Let's just deal with the overall problem or set it aside for a time when we can do it all.
Thank you, Senator Ortman. Mr. Pregnito, I'm going to come before the committee, and if you'd identify yourself, please, for the record.
Madam Chair, members, I'm Gino Fragnito with the Minnesota CPA Society. And to Senator Ortman's point, the simplest way to accomplish that would be to eliminate the estate tax. It's similar to Senator Gazelka mentioned that Wisconsin conformed. They actually, for 2013, no longer have an estate tax. So that, I think, increases the border discussion in terms of people's ability
Fragnito,
to move.
Do you know how much money that would be in foregone revenue if we got rid of it?
For the state of Minnesota,
mm-hmm.
I believe it's around $150 million is what the department has projected.
$150 million, okay. Just keeping that, you know, what that would mean. That's all. I think it's important we do that.
And thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning. And for the record, the Minnesota Society of CPAs is a professional association of accountants of over 9,000 members throughout Minnesota working in both public and in industry and business. And we've had a longstanding policy of supporting federal conformity and believe that conforming is one way to make the tax code simpler for Minnesotans to follow and also makes it less expensive for them. It's a tax code that's easy to understand, is easy for taxpayers to comply with, and I think that's something we all encourage is compliance. I'm happy to see that the committee is addressing this issue on conformity early in session, but would also remind you that there are some additional items that probably would have much more immediate impact as it relates to conformity for taxpayers who are waiting on their taxes for the fiscal or for calendar year 2012. A couple things in addition to what the department has talked about and what the senators have talked about is that Minnesota right now is the only state in the five-state region with an estate tax. So our borders, Iowa, North and South Dakota, and Wisconsin, that, as I said, does create some ability for people to move. And we've all had the discussions about does that really happen and does it really impact people's decisions. And more I'm hearing anecdotally, I haven't done any research with our members, but more and more CPAs are telling me that it may not be the sole factor, but it certainly is increasing in the frequency in which it's coming up in conversations, and people are starting to look at it more. So that's something that I think in these revenue estimates, that's because of the way they're scored, is not able to be taken into account, but it's something that we need to be aware of. Also related to the 1,000 estate tax returns that the department gave as an estimate that would be paying, I believe the number is 1,500 are actually projected to have to file a return. So there are about 500 returns in Minnesota right now that have no estate tax due. And with that, those estates are incurring some significant expense. A simple estate tax return, just doing a survey of some of my members, is anywhere in the range from $6,000 to $10,000, and that doesn't include any business valuations that might need to be included if there are businesses in that estate. So that number continues to go up from there. You know, portability would address some of that. Some of those returns also are where the estate is going to charity. So if there's a zero balance due to the state, the charity is then losing whatever the cost is to file that return. I think moving it up to the $5 million at the federal level would go a long way in addressing that, and would encourage you to consider that as you move forward. And I guess I'll leave you with an analogy of what goes into preparing an estate tax. You know, imagine that you're sitting at the table and you've got a jigsaw puzzle with 1,000 pieces, but you don't have the picture to see what you're trying to put together. And to make it a little more interesting, there probably are some extra pieces in there that you're not quite sure where they fit. And so as a CPA or as the CPA profession, we're going through the estate taxes trying to put this together without actually having the person who has the knowledge there to tell us what the pieces are and how they actually fit together. And that adds to the complexity of it also. So conformity would go a long way in towards eliminating those extra variables and make it easier for taxpayers to understand the formula used to determine their estate tax liability.
Thank you. Are there questions or comments for Mr. Fagnito at this point?
Madam Chair.
Senator Ortman.
I'm all about the elimination. I all about that. And clearly, if we're going to make the huge tax changes that the governor has proposed, there should be some room for this. If we're going to talk about a reform, let's just eliminate this.
And Senator Ortman, that's exactly what we're doing as we hear any number of bills in different areas, some of which are in the same areas that the governor is proposing, and some of them are going to be ones that we come up with on our own. Senator Gazelka, anything further?
No, Madam Chair.
Anything further from the members on this bill? Senator Scoy?
Madam Chair, I have one more question for Ms. Von Mosch.
Okay.
I'm looking at the revenue impact note for Senator Gazelka's Senate file number 40. The last bullet is talking about the long-term impact of the portability. And for this revenue note, you only assumed a 1 percentage point, but you're saying that the impacts could grow quite a bit with time. Could you get us some further information on what that growth might be?
Ms. Von Mosch.
Madam Chair and Senator Scoy, I can get you that information. I need to go back and talk to the tax research people, but I'll get back to you on that.
Sure. Thank you.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Gazelka.
To the testifier, that because of inflation and the fact that Biden moves up with inflation, where that number, you're concerned about that number?
Ms. Von Mosch?
Mr. Chair, I am not sure. I need to check. Thank you.
And if you would share whatever memo you produce with all the members of the division, we appreciate it. Senator Gazelka? We will then lay over Senate File 40 as amended. Thank you, General. Next week, we will meet in the division on Wednesday and Thursday and take up 4 or 5 bills. You'll see them on the schedule coming forward. On Tuesday, Senator Scoy is having a full committee, and we'll have a presentation then on the governor's tax proposals. And on Tuesday, we will meet at 8:30. In the division, we will continue to meet at 9 on Wednesday and Thursday. Any questions? Thank you very much for your attention in a very, very complicated area, as Senator Ortman has pointed out, and there being no further business before the committee. We thank Senator Coonan and Senator Gazelka for their interest in this area, and we stand adjourned.